Things like that, any kind of volunteering that might be age appropriate for them, getting them involved so they don't feel like they're having things are just done to them versus
Yeah.
them actually being engaged. Like I've said about, for adults to be kind to themselves during these events, the same could go for children and adolescents. So it's a slow process in terms when you experience a disaster or an evacuation, and so it's just letting them know they should be patient with themselves and kind to themselves as well as others. And then those who may have been previously traumatized through previous traumatic events, previous disasters, previous like abuse or trauma, or if they have a mental health problem, being prepared to offer potentially some extra professional support for those adolescents is just something to keep in mind if you see that they're really not coping well.
Would you mind sharing some of the maybe phone numbers? And then I guess I'll just encourage listeners to actually put them into your phone so that you don't need to rely on the internet to try to find these. But if you wouldn't mind sharing some of those phone numbers.
Yeah, no worries. So the first would be the Northern BC Crisis Line. So that's 1-888-562-1214. The Canadian Mental Health Association also has a crisis line at 1-977-427-4884. There's also CUSE, it's an Indigenous specific crisis line, and so for culturally relevant support, that is also an option for our Indigenous populations, and that number is 1-800-558-8717. There's also a provincial crisis line, which is 1-800-SUICIDE, and the number for that is again 1-800-784-2433. And then in terms of like where to go online for some reliable and evidence-based resources to cope with wildfire and natural disaster stress, you can visit the Government of BC Natural Disaster and Health. So if you just Google that, you'll find that on the provincial government website, or you can go to bcdisasterstress.ca. If you don't have a pen on you right now, you can go to the Government Natural Disaster and Health or the bcdisasterstress.ca websites when you have a moment and find out a whole bunch more useful information. So hopefully that is helpful for your listenership.
Dr. Farberton, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and to share this very important information with our listeners.
You're so welcome. Yeah, it's such an important topic to cover. So thank you for helping spread the word and recommendations around this important issue that's really affecting so many people right now.
That was Dr. Raina Farberton, a Northern Health preventative medicine physician from her office in Prince George.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast.
And thanks to our friends at CICK News in Smithers, British Columbia, and also the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm very pleased to say that CJSF has been awarded a funding grant to hire a full-time journalist under the Local Journalism Initiative program. And we hope to have that person here contributing to our morning speak up segments starting in September sometime, and bringing a whole bunch more people power to the coverage we can provide you, our listeners out there, and specifically covering events and news from the communities in our area. So that's very exciting, and you'll hear more about that here on Speak Up and CJSF in the coming weeks. Next up is Bird Note, and then we'll be back right after that with Gardening with Embark.
This is Bird Note. On a clear night on a Minnesota lake, a common loon lets out its haunting call.
Well, hang on. That's not right. That's a participant in the annual loon calling competition at the National Loon Center. Each year, adults and children gather in Cross Lake, Minnesota, to celebrate the incredible sounds of the common loon, the state bird of the land of 10,000 lakes. Some impressions are striking. While others... not so much. Some of the most impressive competitors are actually in the youth category, like 2023's second place winner, Malachi. His mom says he spent a lot of time honing his technique at home, next to one of those 10,000 lakes.
He can get him to answer back on the lake, so he sits on the dock and calls and they call.
But of course, no person can match the beauty of a real loon singing out from the water. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Thanks to Bird Note for that. Peter, always, every time we play this, Peter always comments that he wishes they were all about local birds instead of from all around North America.
Well, the point is that then we could go out and see it. And I was saying, I don't exactly hold me to this. I may go through all these bird notes and just have it that from now on just about the birds here in this area. And then we can maybe have a bird club or something here.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're a local birder at home when you're, and maybe you think you could produce a short segment, maybe not one for every day, like Bird Note, as you know, it's a new segment every single day of the year, 365 of them a year, which is a lot. But maybe there's a local bird out there, bird watcher, who would like to come and do a short, one segment a week.
I'm not against Bird Note. I just want it to be about it. And they've been doing it for ages, so we can have every day the older shows about our birds here.
Absolutely. And like I say, you know, maybe there's someone out there, because there are a lot of bird watchers in Vancouver, who'd like to come and record a little segment about our local birds that we can share on the radio and then through social media and through our other channels. And that could be just about our local birds here in the Vancouver and BC region, which would be really exciting. So if you feel like you want to do that, reach out, go on our website and contact the station manager, which is me. And we'll see about making it happen.
Okay.
And then Peter will be happy because he wants to know more about the local birds.
Well, it's more if I don't want to hear there's a Florida bird that's really great that I can't see.
I personally find them all quite interesting and well done. So I enjoy it, even if they're not local birds.
Okay.
All right, time for gardening with Embark. And here we go. Oh, hold on. I better set up the right one. So that we're actually playing Gardening with Embark, and there we go.
Welcome to Gardening with Embark. Welcome, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society.
Nice to be here. Good morning.
So we're in the middle of summer. Is it week
32?
32.
Yes.
Already, even though we're in the middle of summer, and we're thinking about the beach and the other nice summer things, and of course all the sun and the growth in the garden, we're also already thinking about the fall.
Correct, yes. So week 32, and in the back of our minds as gardeners is the first frost in November, right, around the 11th of November, and which will be week 45.
Wow. So we're often talking, every time we do this each week, we sort of mention which week it is. And there is a real important reason for that, because keeping track of what week it is, and the weeks are counted from the beginning of the year, the calendar year.
Correct, yeah.
And keeping track of what week it is a huge guide to what we need to be thinking about.
Correct. So we gardeners usually have deadlines. Mm-hmm. For instance, when is the first frost, when is the last frost, where you have the summer solstice, the winter solstice, and that we use in order to plan our crops, mm-hmm. either indoors, outdoors, when they harvest, what to do. I try to avoid using months. Mm-hmm. Months is a too big chunk of time. And seasons is really 3 months, so it's like, oh, no, it's too long. So yeah. A week gives me time to count these 10 weeks left before the first frost here. And now I need to think, what if my crops are ready in the field, and what I need to, when is the last time I can put seeds? Mm-hmm. So when the frost comes, my plants are in a nice stage that mm-hmm. can stand the winter.
Yeah.
So that's all planning. So yeah, and each week has different activities. Some of the activities will repeat week after week.
Yeah.
But yeah, we keep time track of what the task in the garden.
Great. So as we said, we're in the middle of summer, but now we're, among other things, we're starting to think about the fall, and as you say, when the frost can arrive and what we need to do between now and then.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we are waiting for. This is a good time to start considering if you are going to garden over the winter to build hoop houses.
Mm-hmm.
So gathering all the materials, having a design which kind of hoop house you are going to build, how mm-hmm. tall, how big, and then collecting the materials and start building slowly. There is no rush. It's nice to be outdoors, doing some carpentry. Because if you decide at the last minute, at mid-October, the temperature drops, is wet, is raining, is cold, and you are in a hurry to build whatever you want. And sometimes the build doesn't go as you expected because you have the first snow and all your hoop houses just goes flat because you cannot stand the weight of the snow.
Right.
So it's quite a bit of planning. The other is, I don't want to build hoop houses, so I just want to cover my garden beds with mulch, which mm-hmm. would be either straw or collect the leaves around yep. your neighborhood. So it's another process like, oh, I need to get all my materials to collect all these leaves. And if I'm going to trim them, I will have to invest in a leaf trimmer and so on. So it's, yeah, so it's all these little things that once the trees start falling the leaves, we just go hands-on and start gathering and adding to our garden and keeping as well some for the compost.
Yeah, and as we mentioned in recent weeks, now's the time you're preparing seedlings and whatnot that are going to go on the ground.
Correct. So, yes. Yeah. So my seedlings in the garden were planted on July the 16th,
mm-hmm.
and at the moment they are ready to go into the garden. So my nursery is ready. So we have lots of broccoli, cauliflower, Romanesco, lettuces, and pak choy, so ready to go.
And what are you replacing in the garden? Because as those are gardening going in, I guess other things are finishing.
Yes, so carrots are being harvested, whatever onions we had, and beets. So there will be, and now as well we are harvesting beans, and some pea plants are still there, some peas are still there, so that will be, we need to clear, and immediately goes our new crops.
Right. So before we finish up, one thing about with the mulch, right? I mean, I know we're a little ways from when that's coming in.
Yeah.
But that's protecting the soil.
Correct.
And do you have things growing under that mulch? You plant things and then you put the mulch on top? How does that work?
Okay. So one of the things that we usually plant mid-October is garlic.
Yeah.
And garlic requires frost in order to wake up and start developing.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we can put garlic and on top of that a little mulch. Then no other crops we will have already tall crops like a kale, Swiss chard, and Brussels sprouts, but we put the mulch around the plants.
Yeah.
So the fact that we put mulch on top of the soil is to protect the soil from excessive rain,
mm-hmm.
so all the rain drops makes the soil to jump all around.
Right.
And the other is to give a habitat for any living thing living in the soil, any invertebrate, to come up when the soil gets very cold.
Yeah.
comes to the surface and stays between the mulch and the soil surface, and they stay all winter. So it's kind of giving a nice habitat for those little creatures that otherwise they will be just, they will freeze to death.
And that, of course, helps keep the soil healthy.
Absolutely, yeah. So all these earthworms, imagine your house is all flooded, all frost, they come up and to the surface, and there is that nice layer of soil, of mulch, where they can stay.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, well, already, here we are in summer, already thinking about winter.
Correct, yeah.
I guess that's the gardener's life.
Yeah, we are one season ahead. Yeah.
All right, thank you so much. And we will talk to you again next week. Pablo Rimas, how do people find out more about Embark?
Embark Sustainability, you can find us through our website, embarksustainability.org, or our social media channels at Embark Sustain.
Great. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Steve.
Bye.
All right. Thanks to Pablo Rimas and Embark for that regular segment. We'll be back with another Gardening with Embark segment next week. All right. Peter.
Yeah, so I already kind of distanced myself a bit earlier on the show. The things I disagree on, their immigration stance with Rebel News, even though there's other things I think they're positive with. Now, Ann Coulter, who's a pundit, someone who just appears on a lot of shows.
And with a lot of opinions.
And a lot of opinions. And Ann Coulter brings up her anti-immigration or whatever opinions. Interestingly enough, I was a bit surprised to see that she was involved with the Pamela Jones case. That's like 30 years ago. That sort of predated, what's her name, who became famous? the affair she had.
Paula Jones?
No, Paula Jones, but there was the more famous one who was, I have never had sexual relations with that.
Oh, one. Monica Lewinsky.
Monica, yeah, this kind of.
And Bill Clinton.
Monica Lewinsky, Paula Jones had said she was sexually assaulted by Bill Clinton, which I think happened, actually. And actually, I was a bit surprised to see that she was an unpaid legal advisor 30 years ago, was that, and that's how she sort of came into prominence. Well, I was a bit surprised to see a bit of positivity with her, but anyway. But what happened in May, a few months, they're not cutting edge stuff on my segments, but it was in May. So there was someone, I think he was attempting to maybe Republican candidate for this year. And he was born in the United States, but his parents were from India, immigrants from India. And Ann Coulter, you can get her, I'll paraphrase it, I thought I had the exact, but she said, I agree with your views and everything, but I wouldn't vote for you because you're Indian. And which is a direct racist comment. I mean, it's even going a bit beyond, but they don't allow people that were not born in the United States to become president. So I guess that eliminates us, Magnus. So that's already in place. But the point was, he was born in the United States. His parents were immigrants from India. And the law, of course, allows him to become president if he's able and willing as such. But what is interesting is that Ann Coulter then has this ethnicity concept that she throws into this, that she says, well, it takes a few generations for you to be culturally assimilated enough to be a proper president. So it's a racist statement, but she has this ethnicity conception that she's dragging into it. Now, I was thinking of bringing it up.
You can kind of bet, though, that if it was a different candidate whose parents had emigrated from, say, Ireland, she probably wouldn't bring up the same convoluted argument.
That's right, because it's some European culture.
Yeah.
Basically, what she's for is European American culture. So it's a one. Okay, I was thinking of bringing this up in May when I first heard about this, but then I kind of looked up. Well, is she on The View anymore? Is she? And it looks like she's sort of been. She's not on these shows anymore. So my contention would have been, well, making a statement like that, and you're still on The View, which she has been in the past.
Yeah.
But it seems that it's been a while. I think she's sort of out of the loop, which is good. Mm-hmm. Because I think how she was utilized was that it makes you look good to bring her on the show. If you're like a liberal show, she says the most crazy views, you know. And now she has shown herself to be racist. She has an argument why that isn't a racist statement, and she's wrong about that. It is a directly racist statement. But it's sort of like, well, we're a liberal show. We're going to have her on, and she's going to be outrageous and borderline racist. Mm-hmm. But she was at one point. Now she's sort of crossed the border. And she was sort of like an actual geek show. I would call it like a geek show. Like, they used to have these things in Sideshow called Geeks. Mm-hmm. There's a 1947 movie called Nightmare Alley. And they explain what a geek is. It's just somebody who is not doing very well in the carnival, kind of feels sorry for them, and they eat heads off of live chickens or something. Okay. And so in this movie, the guy said, "I would never be that," and he does. It's a pretty good movie, Nightmare Alley, 1947. So, at the end, he becomes a geek. At the end,
I was not aware of that. Long ago, origin of the term geek. I'm also, it's association with sort of people interested in technology and stuff. But
it predates what that film.
Yeah.
No, it was like it was part of a Sideshow.
But I mean, like, I guess it comes out of that sort of circus environment.
Yes.
Interesting.
Magnus, you were saying that you were born, if it was Victoria, Vancouver Island?
Yeah.
You went to the P&E in the past, though.
Yep.
They used to have a freak sideshow in the 1970s or 60s, 70s. I never went to it, which is just as well. But anyway, so that's sort of what she is, and the thing about, I think she spoke at CPAC. What's that called? With the Republican one, CPAC.
Yeah.
So, and I think after she had made that statement, I mean, she had never made a statement quite like that previously, So I guess, I mean, Rush Limbaugh's had her on, and now he's passed.
Well, one of the things about our times is that, you know, people are increasingly, you know, saying things out loud that they used to know they shouldn't say, even if they fully believed them, right? You know, and that, you know, the biggest change started when Donald Trump came down that escalator and then talked about, you know, Mexicans coming in and they're rapists and criminals and drug dealers.
But some of them are good people.
Yeah. You know, and basically, I remember, you know, seeing that on the news when that happened. And it's like, oh, well, that's pretty much, you know, ruined himself right at the start. But lots of people heard that and they went, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And then the thing becomes, you know, people phrase it as, you know, he tells it like it is, right? That's why we like him. He tells it like it is. And, you know, what they like is that he gives them permission. And people like Ann Coulter gets permission, but also gives permission to people say and do something actively about the racist things they believe.
And they become victims. I'm a victim. I'm Ann Coulter, and I only have $1 million, $2 million.
Probably a lot more than that.
One thing I like to... one thing, this was 30 years ago. Now, you've heard of, what's that think tank we got in the Vancouver area?
The Fraser Institute?
The Fraser Institute. And this was something that went around conspiracy circles that kind of never really made a go of it. People were saying, oh, this is going to happen. The Fraser, what it was the Fraser Institute instigated this concept, which ironically, we kind of went retroactively back from it. It kind of went with the NAFTA agreement. They said, oh, why don't we have open borders for Canada, United States, and Mexico, and a common currency? And a lot of people said, oh, this is one world government happening and all this. But it was just something that the Fraser Institute, which is kind of ironic because they're right wing and so on, but they had proposed this. And it kind of just went away. We went sort of the opposite way. It's sort of interesting also that a lot of the border patrol goes against what was the rhetoric of NAFTA when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, didn't NAFTA mean there would be more kind of an alignment with us, Canada, United States, and Mexico? Not that there'd be a big border or a wall, which is stupid because you need electronic devices.
Well,
you
know? Even then they don't work.
I know, but you know what I mean, especially.
Yeah. Well, NAFTA didn't really loosen immigration controls, right? You know, it was all about, you know, goods and services crossing the border.
Yes.
And, you know, so quite unlike, say, the EU, which, you know, was also about goods and use. But also, you know, in the EU, they're also about harmonizing tax systems and regulation and stuff like that, and eliminating internal borders, which is ultimately, you know, what Brexit in the UK was about, was people, whatever else they're talking about, they're upset about
a variety of things.
Yeah, but upset particularly about immigrants or people coming into the country, you know, with no controls,
right?
You know, Poles and Eastern Europeans and other people like that, that, you know, certain British folks didn't like. And, you know, that's, so it's a big trigger, immigration. It can really, and we're seeing it a bit here with, you know, we've had really high levels of immigration, and that's leading to a certain level of amount of backlash, right?
Well, I think it's also that there's sort of worker programs too that allow people to come, and companies in Canada make use of it, that they don't pay them the minimum wage or whatever through
a
worker program.
I think they have to, you know, they still have to go by wage laws and stuff, so they can't pay less than.
But they seem to skirt it a bit at times.
But it seems to me that a big part of the program is to make sure there's a big pool of workers willing to work for minimum wage. Right, because
okay.
You know, if you get less and less of folks who are willing to or have to work for minimum wage, then they're going to have to pay more.
Well,
and they don't really want to do that, so they want this supply of you know, somewhat vulnerable workers willing to work for minimum wage.
Well, it's a transient worker too. I mean, the Oakwood Shopping Center, which is yet to open in this century, again.
Yeah.
Anyway, they had. Supposedly there's migrant workers, and migrant workers are someone that comes and leaves once the employment is over.
And it's a very recent innovation in Canada. I mean, the traditional form of that we've practiced for the most of our history was that people were invited to come and become part of Canada, not work for a bit and then leave.
But what about the people who did the railway? Weren't they Chinese migrant workers?
Yeah, and they mostly stayed. And
oh,
then we
okay,
got upset because there were too many of them.
Yeah.
And we passed a head tax and prevented them from bringing their families over.
Okay.
And a bunch of other stuff. But for the most part, they stayed.
Okay.
If they could have figured out a way to kick them all out, they would have.
Given
the other things, anti-Chinese things they did at the time.
There's a 1958 film, A Touch of Evil, which is about a border town,
and he, we got 30 seconds.
And Charlton Heston brings up that the Mexican-U.S. border, he kind of breaks about it. It's an undefended border. We don't have one gun or anything. That's 1958. So anyway, that's my wanted to get that in there.
All right,
but we're in for the next show.
Yep, we're all out of time here on Speak Up. Thanks for tuning in and listening this morning. My name is Magnus Tewald.
At Peter R. H.
And we'll be back again. Coming up in a few moments is Democracy Now! Stay tuned for that. And Wandering Rhythms coming up at noon. And a lot more great programming here on CJSF 90.1 FM.